Hello and welcome back to the Utah Puck Report. Matt, we're glad to be here. Today it's just me in the studio, but I've got a very special guest that takes up a lot of time to interview. That's why we have to dedicate the entire time to Richard Shakey Krause. Shakey, thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's an honor and a privilege.
Yeah, that's, I'm sure it is. Shakey, for those that don't know, you've been an equipment manager in the NHL and in hockey for how many years now?
I just finished my 26th season.
26 seasons. And you were in Utah, I believe, from 2001 to 2005? Is that about right?
Yep, that's correct. Yep, four years.
And that was when they were in the AHL. And were they the Islanders affiliate the whole time you were here?
No, I came to Utah because they were the Stars affiliate.
All right, okay. So let's start from the beginning. Where are you from?
I'm from a little town in upstate New York called Rome.
Okay.
And I was born and raised there. Rome is like 10 minutes west of Utica. So I started out in the American Hockey League as a locker room attendant. My friend was the head equipment manager, and he got me in, and I just started out when I was 15, filling water bottles, going down after school every day, cleaning, folding towels, etc. And then when I graduated high school, they offered me a full-time job as an assistant.
Wow. So, yeah. Like, were you a hockey fan before this, or a hockey player, or did you just, how did that start?
I played some high school hockey, but we didn't really have The school I went to didn't have a team. There was 55 kids in my graduating class. And so we had, when I first started going, we used to go watch the old Mohawk Valley Comets in the Atlantic Hockey League.
Oh, wow.
And then the American Hockey League came, and it was the New Jersey Devils affiliate. And they came to Utica for the 87-88 season, and they stayed until 92-93. So when we used to go to the Atlantic Hockey League, tickets were like, $5, you could sit on the glass. And then the American Hockey League came, and it went to like $18 to sit on the glass. But my dad would still take us. We had tickets like two rows off the glass, season tickets. And then eventually when I got that job helping out, they gave me tickets. So then my dad said it was great because then he didn't have to buy tickets. Plus I got paid, so it worked out even better.
Yeah, that's the best part, right? That's my favorite thing with the Grizzlies is that when they bring me in, I don't have to buy a ticket. I get the best seat in the house. It's always nice when you get...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you get to sit right there on the bench. You get to see everything.
So Utica, when they were the Devils affiliate, and this is, some people know this and some people don't, but the legend, Martin Brodeur, had that logo on his helmet, right? That was the U.
Yes, that's correct.
That turned into the Devil's Tell. And I don't, was he in Utica about the same time you were, or was that a couple of years later?
Yeah, he was. And he was just a great guy. He was a class act. Like, he was unreal. And when you'd go to work, once he went to the NHL, even when we used to go work the, because the Devils moved from Utica to Albany, and we moved with them because it was only 60 miles down the road. But like when we'd go back then, the rookie camps weren't in late like they are now, late June, early July. They used to be the third week of August or the first week of September, either right before Labor Day or right after. So like we'd get to go work with those guys, and he was always like, he never forgot his roots or anything. His head never got big. And I was lucky enough to be working with the organization, and when we went there for the playoffs in 95, the American Hockey League team won the Calder Cup in Albany, and the Devils won the Stanley Cup that year, and I was actually on the ice at night.
Wow.
They used to have us help out, like, you know, they had the Black Aces, they had the extra guys, and then, like, I used to go out and help out at night for games, so it was really cool. Yeah, I was on the ice, and we went out that night. I think that party lasted, honest to God, after that game. I don't think I got back to the hotel the next day till like noon.
Oh, man, I love to hear those. I can only imagine the things that went on that night and how much fun that was. And I've had the privilege of being a part of a couple of the, like, I've been to three Stanley Cup parties. Two of them that I helped put together for Trevor here in Utah, and then one that was in, was actually – was in New York for George Parros. But But it's crazy how much fun those are, and that's months after all the adrenaline and, you know, that emotion of winning the cup. I can't even fathom being there that night and being with the team, and that'd be so cool. I mean, that's got to be the pinnacle of all sports right there.
It is, and, you know, the thing is that year for us, like, we won the Calder Cup on May 31st, which was Memorial Day weekend. And then they sent us to New Jersey like 2 days later, so we didn't even get to really celebrate the Calder Cup. They made everybody go to New Jersey, and then they broke down and kept the extras, and then we stayed there. So I think I didn't end up leaving New Jersey until, like, because that was the year of the half-year strike.
Yeah.
So the half-year lockout. I don't think I left New Jersey until, like, almost July 1st.
Wow.
Yeah, I literally lived out of a suitcase in a hotel, like, from the end of May until July 1st.
Well, that's just got to be a dream when you're. How old were you when all that was going on?
When all that went down, I was 21.
Wow, that's got to be a great way to be 21. I can't even fathom it.
Yep.
It's just, that's pretty cool. So, tell me one thing too before we get too far into your life. When did you become shaky? When did that come about, and how did that come about?
That came about because, as you know, if you've seen me, I'm 6 foot, but I'm not a very slender human by any means. Although I've gotten myself down from the days when I was in Salt Lake City. I'm down to like 220 now, but I used to come to the rink every day almost every other day with a milkshake from McDonald's because I loved the ones in March, too,
okay.
The Shamrock Shakes. So it was pinned on me by a couple of players. One of them was Billy Guerin. The other one was Jared Scaldi. They would always say to me, like, you don't have a nickname, and you always have a milkshake in your hand, and so we're just going to call you Shaky.
Nice.
And it stuck with me, and then I'll never forget, I went into Lou Lamoriello's office after I graduated high school. I went to New Jersey, sat down, and he looked at me and goes, okay, Shaky, he goes, we're going to give you a job. And that's, he even knew me that. And Charles Wong, when he was alive and he owned the Islanders, he would literally call me Shaky. Like, he had no idea what my name was.
Well, that's a good thing and a bad thing, right? It's good to be known.
Yeah, it's good to be known, and I'm here at the trainers conference right now, and like everybody knows me in the hockey world by that name.
Yeah, well, honestly, yeah. I think the first few years I knew you, I didn't know your name. I just knew you as Shaky, and it's that way in hockey. It's that way in the fire department too. In my fire department, we had a guy we called Milkshake for the same reason. That was his nickname forever, and it's funny when I introduce people as nicknames, and when they're like, oh, what's his real name? I'm like, I don't know. It takes me too long to think what their real name is.
You got to, he probably went to Crown Burger, though, to get the good ones.
Oh, yeah, probably. That's just one of those things, right? It's good to have a nickname. It's good to be one of the guys that's cared about enough to have a nickname. You have a brother that's also, is your brother still in doing equipment? Or what's he doing now?
No, my brother was with the Stars, and then he was with the Coyotes in their AHL systems, and then he ended up finally, he's got two boys now. One is 13, and the other one is 11, so he ended up deciding that it was time to grow up. He stopped it in Portland, Maine. He does real estate there in Portland, Maine. He makes like golf putters out of hockey sticks.
Oh, I remember that. And, yep.
Yep, and he's got a nice little ice cream shop up in Gorham, Maine that he leaves open year round, and he's got so much on the go between the boys and the family, and I think sometimes he'll say he misses it, and then other times he'll be like, I don't miss it cuz I'm home for holidays, I'm home for Saturday nights, I'm home for Sundays. I'm not gone. And so I think he sometimes he has the itch, and then other times he doesn't.
Yeah, because that's,
you know,
one thing I don't think a lot of people know, and I was talking to you about this before, is that, man, you guys put in a ton of hours. To be a professional athlete, you put in a lot of hours, right? You come to the rink, and you work out, and then you get on the ice, and you skate, and then, you know, you'd go over video or whatever, and then you leave. But the whole before you get there as an athlete, and after you leave as an athlete, your equipment guy's there, setting up, taking care.
Yeah.
So, like, what's a typical day? And then you guys are on the road nonstop, you know. And then it's the same thing on the road. You're the first there. So, what's a typical day like for an equipment manager at home?
Well, usually for me, like even when I worked in Salt Lake City, I'd be at the rink by 7, no later than 7:30. Back then, we didn't have interchangeable skate blades like now we do, so you can just change them and then sharpen the backup pair, you know, whenever you get a chance. But usually, I would be at the rink 7, 7:30, and then usually your first player is rolling in at 8:30, quarter to 9 usually, and then they always had a morning skate at 10 o'clock or 10:15. And then by the time they're out of there, it's 11:30, and then it's doing laundry, doing towels, vacuuming, getting the locker room cleaned up, putting out the game laundry, putting out the game socks, putting out the game jerseys, cleaning visors on helmets, which everybody, you know, wears now. You're doing that. There's just like a whole a list of things. It's all in your mind. And then, of course, you got some players that want their skates sharpened in the afternoon before games. So, you know, I like to sharpen everybody in the morning so they can get used to it on the ice, but some guys like it in the afternoon. And then you may have repairs, you know. So I know in Utah, like by the end of the day, it used to be walking in at 7 and walking out at like midnight almost.
Yeah. And that's a whole season of doing that. And people just don't – I think people don't understand the work ethic it's got to take to become an equipment manager to maintain. You got to keep those guys up. And then you get prima donna athletes, which I want to talk to you about too, because I think you worked with one of the utmost prima donna goaltenders I've ever known. And I want to hear more about him. But I also want – so tell me more about your time in Utah. What are your fondest memories or your boldest memories about Utah?
I'll tell you the one thing I loved about Utah is I'd been there so many times because I worked in the old IHL. Like, I worked in Orlando as an assistant. I worked in Las Vegas as a head guy. And then when Las Vegas folded, I went to Houston, and they were with the Stars. And then we moved to Dallas. And I'll never forget, I got there in July of that year. And the first thing Tim Mauser said to me when I sat down is, he goes, "Oh, by the way," he goes, "I forgot to tell you too." He goes, "You know, it's an Olympic year." And I was like, "Oh." And he goes, "The Olympics are here, right?" And I'm like, "Oh." So that took like a lot of like planning because, you know, we were going on the road for, I think it was like the first span was, I think the total span was something like 18 games in 44 days.
Wow. All on the road.
All on the road. And you could not get back into the building to get anything. Team USA used the Grizzlies locker room. They had to move the offices out. They relocated them somewhere. You know, and we were just gone. Like, we were like 1 or 2 days up at the Accord, and then we went on the road. So I literally had like, I had to have like, and we were flying commercial. And like, so for the first 3 weeks of that trip, every week we would go through Houston once. So I FedExed a whole bunch of sticks to Houston. And then when we would go through, I would reload to go on the rest of the trip. And then the second 3 weeks, we would go through Grand Rapids every week. So thank God the schedule worked out like that. And those places allowed me to store equipment and stuff. And then if guys needed like a new pair of skates, I just had the factories hold all the skates. And then we would just get them as we needed them during that course of that 6 weeks.
Wow. Yeah, I don't. You know, I didn't even think about how bad that was on the Grizzlies during the Olympics. For us as hockey fans here, that was so amazing to have those guys here and to know, you know, that Mike Richter was in that locker room and that goalie stall, and that some of the, you know, those legendary players. I mean, you get an Olympic team, and that's the best of the best. And for us, it was unreal. But for you guys, that must have just been torture. That's so much work.
Yeah. It was. And then when we finally did get to come home, then you're reverting to putting it all back together.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like you're sitting there going, like, you're putting it all back together and you're trying to get it all back. But in the end, it all worked out and everything worked out. And I think to be honest with you, I think we went like 12-6 in those 18 games. So it was almost like better to play away than it was to play home.
You guys had a really good team that year, right? Was Scaldi there that year?
Yeah. No, Scaldi wasn't there that year. That was the year they shared with Florida. They had the split affiliation.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, so I believe that was, I want to say, like Chad Elbin and Wade Flaherty.
Yeah, it was Flaherty. I remember his that mask that year. He had that Florida mask with the like flamingos on it or something.
Yeah, I believe it was like Elbin and Flaherty.
Yeah.
And then the next year, Corey Hirsch came in.
Yeah.
And then the third year, it was like you had Mike Smith, Jason Bekashua,
yep,
and Dan Ellis. You had like a rotating group of, because they were all the young guys coming up with the stars. But yeah, there was a really good team that year. They lost in the second round of the playoffs the first year.
Yeah, yeah. We talked about that goaltending trio last week on the show just because of just how amazing that was to have all those goalies here at the same time. That was unbelievable. And to see, I mean, that was a great thing about being in the AHL, is just having all that talent come through Utah. I mean, you know.
And you think about it, it either went through Utah or it went to, they went to Boise, because that was the, well, back then that was the ECHL or the West Coast Hockey League affiliate, either one of them. They played in both leagues, but yeah, you'd go to Boise and then you could have them back. I mean, there was a lot of good players that came through there with the Stars. You had, you know, like Steve Gainey, Gavin Morgan, John Sim, Dan Janczewski. I mean, yeah. Jim Montgomery, who coaches the Stars now, played for 2 years there.
Right. Yeah, that's cool. And that's funny. That's how I get to know a lot of these guys, and they go on to have successful careers. And just because I e-bugged and kind of got to know them, and usually they used me as some kind of a, since I was a firefighter and I knew everybody else in town, and they wanted a fishing guide or a hunting guide, so I'd hook them up with firemen, and then just, you know, that could take them out and show them around, and then, you know, the firefighters made some money on the side, and the guys were always happy. I took really good care of Bekashua while he was here, and that's how I ended up with a podcast. It's because I know all these guys just because they came through here, and then they went on to be successful because we had such a good organization. But I want to get back
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to mention that Tim Mauser thing, how you say he forgot to tell you about the Olympics being here. You know, as well as I know, Tim Mauser doesn't forget anything, and he just didn't tell you. He didn't tell you until he had you inked and in the building that how much work you were going to have ahead of you.
Yeah, he was like, I forgot to tell you, and I was like, well, all right, that's fine. And then he broke my chops and said that he wished that the Stars would have had a guy affiliated with USA Hockey, so he could have gotten more free stuff. But I said, no, I'm not.
Now that's the Tim Mauser we know.
Yep, that's the Tim Mauser you know
that's
for
a,
sure.
A guy that knows how to work the system. I love that guy. We got to have him on the show, too. All right.
Oh,
so,
you got to get him on there.
So you were here for 4 seasons?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. Then, so you've mentioned some of the guys that came through. What about the guys you got to know here? Like, did you make some, besides me being one of your lifetime best friends and someone that you look up to, did you get to know some other people here? Like, who sticks out that you got to know while you're here?
You know, there was just so many great people, and there's still people like yourself that I talk to. I had people in the building that would end up helping me out, like, that I still talk to, like Alan Poole and Jack Renner and those guys. They would all, like, every day, like, they would leave there. And Alan worked at the Hoyt Bow and Arrow, which was right across the street from the Easton Distribution Center out by the airport, which was great because I'd be like, hey, Alan, I got a box of sticks there waiting for me. Can you bring them down? And it was perfect. Like, I didn't have to wait, you know. But, like, Gary Jones, and you know who Gary Jones is, like, and now, you know, he's no longer with us, but like him and his wife lettered and numbered our game jerseys, and I would go over there and they'd have me over for dinner and stuff, and they saved me a ton of times with guys either, you know, coming down from Dallas or guys coming up from Boise. Like, I could literally go by their house, like, because, you know, we flew commercials. Sometimes somebody would meet us, like, on the road, and I would drive by Gary's house at 5 a.m. and he would just leave the jersey hanging out on the door handle.
Wow.
And I would just go over and pick it up in a bag, you know, and take it with me so I could go to the airport and have a have a nameplate or a jersey for a player. So he was huge. And then, of course, you know, like Steve Metcalf, all the linesmen, you know, and Matt Brickley, who's no longer with us, and those guys. You know, it was a regular little fraternity. And then, of course, yourself, and then, you know, there was a lot of men's leagues guys that I used to know because we used to have those end-of-the-year equipment sales.
Oh, yeah.
And those guys would all come in, and there was a lot of guys, you know, and even like Tom Horgas, you know, he's no longer with us, like Horgie and all those guys. And I'm telling you, people are like, oh, you lived there and you liked it? I loved it. Like, it was awesome. I you know, if they would have stayed in the American Hockey League, I still might be there to this day because I loved it.
So, speaking of that, you've seen what's been going on with the American Hockey League right now. Total West Coast league now. You know, I mean, it's got a West Coast division too, and that was a big reason the Grizzlies left the American Hockey League, is it was $1 million a year travel budget. But now with all these teams out here, plus having Vegas 500 miles away, and now we're going to have Seattle out here in the NHL. Do you see Utah going back to the AHL?
Oh God, I wish they would. I wish they would. Because I think they could support it. And if you had a close affiliate like Seattle, I think the people would really rally around it. And the American Hockey League has set it up where they're themselves down to 76 games, and then that Western Division is down to 68 games. So, I mean, if you throw a team in Salt Lake and you go play in California for four games, you know, all it takes is one flight, and then you just jump on the bus and you play a little ping pong, you know, and then you, like, take a quick flight down to Tucson to go play a couple games and fly back, and you could fly over to Texas and play a couple games and fly back. I mean, I really wish it would, because the East Center is a beautiful building. Like, it's just, they have a great setup for the Grizzlies. Like, it's one of the best setups I've worked in a lot of places, but that locker room was by far my favorite.
Oh, that's good to hear. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And the rumors keep coming, and I got to be 100% honest. I have not talked with Grizzlies management about what's going on with it, but I've heard a bunch of different rumors and from people that were, you know, high in the organization. And then I don't know if you know, but the Vivint Arena, which used to be the Delta Center when you were here, they purchased brand new boards and everything last year for a three-game series with the LA Kings, Vancouver Canucks. So we have a summer, or we have a preseason game here. We had one last year. We have one coming up this year, and then again next year. And the rumor is either because the Vegas owner flat out said he wanted his affiliate here. And so the rumors keep flying that either the Grizzlies are going to go, and the only reason they haven't is because Vegas didn't have enough players to fill a AHL team yet. But they could at the end of next year after the draft. So the rumor is either that's going to happen or somebody else is going to bring an AHL team and put it in the Vivint Arena, which those all sound great to me.
Yeah, I mean, and when I worked in Orlando, we actually lost in the Turner Cup Finals to the Grizzlies, and we got swept there in that series, but we played a couple of games. I mean, that's another beautiful building too.
Yeah,
I mean, you got two excellent choices either way, and they deserve it. I mean, there's a lot of hockey fans there. People just don't realize how many hockey fans there are in that valley and how many good players have come out of that valley and how the programs have developed out of that valley now.
Yeah, and a lot of that has to do with the same people that you were talking about before, Gary Jones, Steve Metcalf, of course, Matt Brickley. Those guys have really made changes in this area and really helped develop the product that we're putting out. I mean, we've got, we've got 9 players. Well, I think we've got 13 players playing NCAA at some level, either Division I or to Division III. We got kids in major juniors this year. I mean, we really have made a big step, and I'd like to see us go to the next level. I'd like to see us back in the AHL. Tell me, too, so you leave here and you go to New York. That's got to be amazing to be a New York boy and end up back with the Islanders. Was that, if you could have picked one of the three teams to go to in New York, what would have been your pick?
that would have, I would have picked the Islanders because growing up, you were either a Buffalo Sabres fan, you're an Islanders fan, you're a Rangers fan. We did not get Rangers or Sabres games because they were on like the pay channels. They were on like MSG. But the Islanders and the Devils played on Sports Channel. So that was part of our TV package in upstate New York. And actually the other TV channel that was part of that package was WSBK out of Boston. So I watched a lot of Bruins games.
Oh.
But I would have been either, and haven't worked for the Devils. To go back and work for the Islanders was awesome. The ironic part about that story is that was the year of another full lockout, 04-05, and the Coyotes were the Utah affiliate at the time, and that's when Utah decided they didn't want to play in the American Hockey League anymore, and the Coyotes were going to San Antonio, and the Coyotes asked me to hold out and give them 2 weeks to get their deal done in San Antonio. And within that time, the Dallas Stars gave me a 3-year contract to go to Des Moines, Iowa, because that was going to be their new affiliate.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I signed the contract to go back with the Stars. I moved to Des Moines for 4 weeks. And then my buddy that I grew up with in Utica was the head equipment manager for the New York Islanders. And he called me up and he goes, I need you to come to New York. So I had to go get, well, back then there was no compensation, but I had to get released by the Stars in order to go work for the Islanders because I had just signed a contract.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so that's how I got to New York. Yep.
So tell me, I'm going to ask you about a couple of the guys that you were with
and sure.
on the island there. Because,
yeah.
All right, as an equipment seller at one point, as an equipment rep, I had some interaction with Rick DiPietro.
Yes.
And it was pretty unique, to say
yeah,
the least.
He's a unique individual, to say the least. Yes.
I know. I've had a lot of conversations with you about him. I know you hold him in high regard and have thought a lot about him, but what was it like to be his equipment guy?
Let's just say it's a very unique situation. And I just saw him 2 weeks ago at an Islanders alumni charity function, and he hasn't changed a bit, even though he doesn't play anymore. But yeah, he was definitely different. How do you want to put it? He was very high maintenance, but if you took care of him, he was always very appreciative. But he was always one of those guys that he was the comedian, you know, class clown. And we had two of them. We had him and Gar Snow. And when they teamed up on you, they could just get nasty.
I can only
imagine.
They
tried throwing me in a clothes dryer once. They put me in a figure four leg lock to see if it really worked.
What? DiPietro was ripped, right? Like, he was a built dude. That guy loved lifting weights, so that's...
Well, you know what, Jay? When I first got there, he wasn't. And then the second year I was there, he came back and went on a serious, hardcore workout program. He kept the black book. And the name of the black book was My Body is a Temple. And he would write down everything he ate in the black book. And he was shredded. He came back, and the league had just implemented the rules where he had to measure the goalies for the upper bodies and the pants.
Yeah.
So goalies couldn't wear double XL pants with size 32 waist.
Right.
And
the Gar Snow rule.
The Gar Snow rule, basically. Yeah. Well, the chest gear they sent in for him didn't fit. So we had to get Kay Whitmore to fly down from Toronto, remeasure him, go through it all again, and then get another upper body made because he was just that shredded. He was just that jacked. Like that summer, he had just gotten his new contract, and he had decided that was going to be, you know, he was going to just get into it, and he got into it. Then, unfortunately, he started having the hip problems.
Right.
And he had a couple of knee problems. And
you say new contract. Well, that was like the longest contract in the history of the NHL, right? Didn't he sign some ridiculous, especially for a goalie? It was like, I can't remember what it was. 10 years? 14 years?
No, it was, I think it was like 13 years, $65 million or something.
Yeah.
Or it was just some astronomical number. And I remember my first year, the owner, Charles Wong, wanted to give it to him, and Mike Milbury was the GM, and Mike said, not a chance. Mike said, you'll have to take me out of the building in a body bag before I'll sign that contract.
Wow.
So then when Garth became the GM, then Charles went to Garth, and then Garth ended up giving it to him. But Mike refused to give him that contract. He's like, there's no way I'm giving him that deal.
Well, that's just such a huge gamble on a goaltender, because goalies don't typically, not many goalies last 13 years.
No, and I think it was just Charles Moore wanting to make a splash, make a media splash.
Yeah,
like when I first started with the Islanders, they weren't doing very well. They struggled for fans. Like, they would give us 8 season tickets to give away just to try to get people in the building.
Wow. Yeah. I remember hearing those stories. And then, you talk about, one more thing on DiPietro. I remember when he got drafted, and the announcer, I can't even remember who it was, but he said, here's a kid you're drafting that's ego's so big that when the equipment manager packs him up, he's going to need a bag for his gear and a bag for his ego. Because he was very confident, as you can say. So, you're at the Fats Fem show now, which is the Professional Hockey Athletic Trainers and Equipment Managers show, where you guys get to go through and you get to see all the new gear that's coming out, all the new, and then the trainers get to see all the new techniques of recovery or whatever. But I remember I was there the year that Tavares was drafted. So you and I were together when you got the phone call that you did indeed get the first overall pick. Can you?
Yeah, I think we're in Phoenix, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was in Phoenix. Because you knew.
Yes.
You guys are, it's nice you guys take care of yourselves. Because one year you're at that resort in Phoenix, and then the next, you rotate it, right? And then the next year you're in Florida? Is that how you guys still do it?
No, what they do is they go to different places, and what they do is they do it and they book the rooms in 5-year blocks. So like last year we were in Orlando. This year, now today, I'm in Austin, Texas, where it's like 111 out.
Oof.
And then next year it's in Orlando again, and then the year after that it's in Phoenix.
Oh, okay. At that gorgeous Marriott resort there in Phoenix.
Yes, it is. It's at that gorgeous resort in Phoenix. But I've been here since Tuesday, and today is the first day of the exhibits, actually. And as I told you, I was going to go over by the goalie exhibit and see if I can't chum some stuff for you from Vaughn.
Yeah, I'll take whatever. I'm a Brian's guy, but I'll take whatever.
All right. I'll see if I can't hit the Brian's guys up.
All right, so tell me about that day if I remember right, they ended up flying you away from that show, and you went right back and started dealing with, they were bringing Tavares in, and for the, because the rookie camp started right away, right after draft, right? And what was it like to have a player of that caliber coming in, and that much anticipation?
I'm not going to lie to you, like, he was so timid, so shy, so polite, it was unreal. It was unreal. He was so, he was so shy. Like, I don't think for the first 2 days I was there, I could have said more than 10 words to him, because the minute he got drafted, he was a CCM player head to toe. So CCM made him pants right away. They made him gloves. They sent the helmets right into New York. Like, it was basically the PR people came back from the draft with everything for him, because like CCM had anticipated him getting drafted by the Islanders, so they had everything. And that draft, I believe that year was in Montreal.
Oh, yeah.
So, and CCM is all right there. So, yeah, I think for the first couple of days, I didn't really talk to him. And then our head equipment manager said to me, he's like, yeah, he goes, I want you to deal with John. And I said, okay. And I walked up to him. I said, John, I said, you want your skates sharpened? And he kind of looked at me and he goes, yeah. And then it kind of broke the ice. And then eventually after that, he grew out of his shell. But they had a lot of good mentors around for him. Like, they brought in Doug Waite, Bill Guerin, Mike Sillinger.
Oh, yeah.
And Johnny actually lived in Dougie Waite's pool house, which was his guest house, like Sidney Crosby lived at Mario Lemieux's. Johnny lived at Dougie's for 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah, with Matt Molson, because Johnny was very tight with Matt Molson. And when the Islanders had signed Matt Molson as a free agent from the LA Kings system, they lived together in Dougie's pool house.
Yeah, see, and that's one of the things I think hockey does right, that the NHL teams do right. I don't know that any other sport does it, where sometimes they'll even just bring in a senior guy that's known as a father figure in the locker room, or, you know, there's already a guy there. Like, well, to be Sidney Crosby and to be able to go live with Mario Lemieux, and, you know, they've got, what's his name, Tkachuk's kids living with, you know, they end up living with these guys that help raise them, because you got an 18-year-old that's just been drafted and been handed a couple $1 million, and those kids could go wrong really quick, or you have huge egos like DiPietro and make a lot of mistakes. But you have a father figure there, and I think it's so smart that they just put him in a house or bring a guy in to help kind of raise him, make sure he doesn't make those mistakes that young players make.
They did, and you could tell, too, that John was taking it all in, and John even sat next to Dougie. He sat next to Doug Waite, and Billy Guerin was right there. Mike Sillinger was right there. And we had Alexei Yashin was there at the time. And, yeah, we had, like, a lot of older guys floating around, Mark Parrish. So it was really good for John because he saw what everybody did, and he took little pieces of everybody's routines, you know, and incorporated them into making his own routine.
Yeah. So you got to see him grow up from an 18-year-old to, like, you got to see his leadership qualities in the locker room. Was he a true leader in the locker room?
He is. John's quiet, but he speaks up when he has to. And I think John just leads through, he leads through his actions, like his dedication to the game, his dedication he is one of the most prepared players you'll ever meet, like constantly, like going over video, constantly asking the coaches for more video, reading sheets, scouting reports. Like, he is like on top of it. And it's pretty neat, to be honest with you, when you're with one organization as I was, because I got to watch John grow up. I watched Matt Molson grow up. I watched Josh Bailey grow up.
Right.
Josh Bailey literally started when he was 18. Now he's got two kids. I watched Casey Zizekas grow up. It's so different to watch those guys. You know, you work with them at a rookie camp. They go back to juniors, and then eventually they start in the American Hockey League, or they start in the NHL, and then they start, you know, they get their girlfriends, and then eventually they get married, and they have kids, and you're like, wow, like, next thing you know, you're like, holy, like, what happened?
Yeah, that's so cool. And for everybody else in the world, they just see a guy that's in the NHL, they just figure, all right, well, there's a guy that's in the NHL, so he's mature and he's got his life going or whatever. But you get to really get to know them as people and watch them develop and change and mature. I've got to see it a little bit recently with players, and just, it's fun. Well, I've got to watch it with Trevor Lewis. You know, I've got to watch him mature and become a functioning man, and that's been pretty cool. I got to admit. So you got to have some strong feelings towards Tavares, and he's kind of family to you. You've been around him forever. So he goes to Toronto, makes a professional decision to go to Toronto, and then comes back to the island for that game last year. And you saw how they treated him. How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, like, I was in last summer, I was in Costco, and I had an Islanders T-shirt on, and the lady said, oh, she said, I'm not very happy with the Islanders. And I said, why? And she said, well, you know, John Tavares left, and all I could say to the lady was is, you know, ma'am, you just don't know everything that went on with it. You know what I mean? Like, there's more that goes on to it than people know about. There's decisions that players have to make that aren't just necessarily always based off money. You
right.
know what I mean? There's there's family that plays a role. There's childhood dreams sometimes that play a role. There's a lot of things that go into it. And when that player makes his initial announcement, and on top of it all, people are like, well, you know, we're kind of mad because he didn't ask to be traded or whatever. And what I tell people is, how do you know he didn't ask to be traded? You know what I mean? Maybe the GM was under pressure to not trade him from ownership. You know what I mean? And just let it play out the way it played out. There's so many scenarios that people don't know on the outside.
Right.
That people, even myself, I had no idea. Like, I had no clue. Like, I had no clue. And honestly, in all my heart, I thought he was going to resign. Like, but I had no idea either. So there's a lot of things people don't know. There's a lot of variables that go into that decision. Let's just say that decision wasn't made within 5 minutes.
Right, right. Well, I think I thought he was going to resign too. I thought a lot of that. I've got to see the other side of this. I was present when Zach Parise went through a lot of this with New Jersey. And what a lot of people don't know, that decision was kind of made for Zach 2 years prior to that, when the Devils spent all their money on Kovalchuk and were not going to have salary cap room to re-sign him. Now, granted, Kovalchuk ended up retiring, but, you know, the Devils had kind of picked back then who they were going to keep. And then Zach, you know, it started working out that Zach was going to go home and play in Minnesota. And that, you know, a lot of people had a lot of things to say. Of course, any time you get in the NHL a 10-year, $100 million contract offer, that's got to play a big part in making your decision, plus if you can go home. But with Tavares, I mean, did it break your heart to see the fans treat him that way, though?
Yeah, like, and I was watching, you know, I watched it on TV, and I was just, I was like, it just, they don't get it, you know? I mean, like, he's not a traitor, he's not a snake, he's not, you know, it's just these people. I mean, I understand they get that dedicated and they get that into it, but in the long run, I don't think the people realize what goes into those decisions sometimes.
Right. And, you know, New York's known as being a tough place to play. And if you, you know, you come back in that, wearing the enemy sweater after being, like, he was highly regarded in that market for so long that I knew it was going to be bad. I just didn't know it'd be that bad. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that.
Yeah, I didn't think it would be that bad either. But he got through it, and he lived with it for 2 games, I believe, and that was it, you know?
Yeah, and the Islanders had an amazing year, and hopefully people forgive and forget and move on. I think good things are going to happen for the Islanders. They're just – I saw a thing. They still have, like – this year they have – they're one of the top 5 teams for salary cap space, so they have some real opportunities to make some improvements.
Oh they're going to be in really, really good shape. Yeah, they're going to be in good shape for sure.
So Shakey, where are you at now? You left the Islanders. You know, there's big shakeups in the Islanders, and you end up where? Where are you now?
I'm with the Kalamazoo Wings in the East Coast Hockey League. We are the East Coast Hockey League affiliate of the Vancouver Canucks, which makes our American Hockey League affiliate the Utica Comets.
Oh, wow. Almost full circle.
Yeah, so it all kind of bleeds back into it. But yes, they are our affiliate. I'm back, semi-back affiliated with the team back from where I am.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing, you know. Sometimes change is not always what you want at first, but sometimes it's a good thing in the long run.
Well, because I know a couple openings came up, and I know Utah came open, and I reached out to you right away when I knew that was happening, and you said, no, I'm good. I'm happy where I'm at. I'm not, like, you were, you're really liking it there, and I've always liked Kalamazoo way back in the day, and then, you know, we had a Utah goalie there before with Jeff Levy. Rich, I don't know if he re-signed. I don't know what the deal is, but you had, well, I don't know if he came to you, but you guys had Bachman in Utica. He's a Utah guy. Did you know that, Richard Bachman?
No. Yeah, I didn't know. I did not know that. Yeah, he was in Utica, too. I didn't know he was a Utah guy.
Yeah, he's from Salt Lake, came to my camps. Like, my first 2 years of camp, Richard was a student at my camp, and then they sent him away to prep school in Massachusetts, I think, and then he ended up with the Idaho Steelheads, and one of the games, or a few of the games that I backed up for Idaho, I was backing him up and got to talk to him a lot, and it was just kind of funny. He's like, oh, I remember you teaching me how to do a skate save and stack my pads. And obviously that's all thrown out the window now. Nobody does that anymore, but it was, yeah. So I've reached out to him a couple times to have him on the show, and I know he had a rough year NHL-wise. I know he got pulled up and didn't do very well. I'm interested to see where he ends up.
I'm not really sure what's going on with that stuff. I don't really have a clue until I get back to Kalamazoo and they give me a list and say, here you go.
Right. Yeah, I think I was looking into it. I think this was the last year in his contract, and the way things went this year, I'd be surprised to see him stay with Vancouver. I'd almost expect to see him in like the DEL next year or something, but I could be wrong. You never know.
No, you don't exactly. Yeah, you never know.
I host a hockey show, but I'm the last guy that should be forecasting anything because I had a great bracket, had a bracket league, all these people in it. Thought I knew exactly what was going to happen. I had picked Vegas and Tampa Bay to fight for the Stanley Cup, and I don't think I had one team advance out of my bracket from the first round. So apparently, I just do a lot of guesswork.
Yeah, my bracket got destroyed too.
Well, I'm glad to hear I wasn't the only one. Like, it was amazing. Even the NHL Network they had their own brackets, NHL.com, and they're like, you know what? We're going to let you guys have a second chance because nobody got the first round.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah. Shaky, it's awesome to talk to you and catch up, man. And I hope you have an awesome summer. Do equipment guys really get a summer? Do you get a little bit of time to relax?
Yes, we do. We get a couple months off to rest and relax, and then get back at it usually around the first week of September.
All right, perfect. Well, enjoy your time. I appreciate you breaking your summer vacation for us, and I'll send you my address if you hit over there by that Brian's booth, and they've got any samples they'd like a 46-year-old to try out for them. I'd be more than happy to do that.
All right, I'm going to go over there right now and find out.
All right. Well, if Karen's there, you tell her hi from me.
All right, I sure will.
All right, Shaky. Well, for anybody else that's listening, if you haven't subscribed to this podcast yet, just remember all you got to do is go to kslsports.com and look for podcasts. We're right there. You can always text the word puck to 57500. That gets you signed up. It's pretty simple. Wherever you get your podcasts, look for the Utah Puck Report and make sure to subscribe to us. That's how we keep this thing going. And once again, that's the Utah Puck Report.